to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, what is the historical relationship between Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot? Sukkot is an 8-day holiday which begins 5 days after Yom Kippur, on the 15th of Tishri. I think that the first thing that comes to our mind when we think about this holiday is living, or at least eating, in a makeshift cabin without a roof. Or maybe it's the so-called four species. But what significance do these things have? And what are some other traditions associated with this holiday? Most Jewish holidays are either historical or agricultural in origin, or both. Sukkot is both. It was originally an agricultural holiday, one of the three pilgrimage holidays in the Jewish calendar. According to the Book of Exodus, three times a year, after each harvest, men were required to journey to the temple in Jerusalem with offerings of the first crops of the season. A portion of these was used as a sacrifice, and the rest was given to the priestly families. Only after this could the new season's crops be used as food. These three pilgrimages correspond to the holidays of Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot. The Bible also gives us the historical origin of this holiday. The book of Leviticus tells us that it represents the journey of the Israelites through the desert after the exodus from Egypt, during which time the people had to live in impermanent booths. However, makeshift shelters were also used by agricultural workers who lived in them at the time of the harvest, so this tradition, like so many others, has a double origin. In fact, the word Sukkot means just that. It's the plural of sukkah, the temporary hut that's built for this holiday, and where observant families eat and often sleep. The sukkah, by definition, must be a flimsy structure, and its covering must allow the stars to be visible from inside. Sukkot, since it's a harvest festival, carries with it the idea of gathering and hospitality. The gathering together of people is an important aspect of it. Traditionally, it's customary for families to invite their friends and even beggars to share a meal with them in their sukkah. The other major holiday symbols are the four species, the etrog or citron, the lulav or palm, the myrtle, and the willow. These are tied together in a special way and waved up and down each morning of the holiday while a blessing is said. Since Sukkot comes at the beginning of the rainy season in Israel, this ceremony may have originally been a way of asking God to bless the farmers with rain. In fact, the last day of Sukkot, called Hoshana Rabbah, became known as a day of judgment for rain, and special prayers for rain became part of the service held on the next day. The four species have other symbolic meanings as well. On the one hand, they represent the four-letter name of God. There's also a masculine-feminine symbolism. The palm is obviously a masculine symbol, and the citron, which is breast-shaped, is obviously feminine. In both these cases, holding all four items together symbolizes unity. In addition, each of the species refers to a part of the body through which man is to serve God, the heart, the backbone, the eyes, and the lips. However, my favorite symbolic meaning is one I found in the first Jewish catalog. It says that taste represents learning. Smell represents good deeds. The etrog has both taste and smell. The lulav has taste, but not fragrance. The myrtle has smell, but no taste. and the willow has neither. Each represents a different kind of person. Some have both learning and good deeds. Some have one without the other, and some have neither. Real community is found in their being bound together and brought under one roof. What I like about this interpretation is the idea of bringing together all kinds of people and inclusion in the community, which is a recurrent theme in Judaism. It reminds me of the story of the four children in the Passover Haggadah, and I think it's yet another reminder that being Jewish is not just practicing a religion, but being part of a community. This humanistic aspect of Judaism is sometimes hard to explain to people who haven't had much contact with Jews, and personally, I think it's one of the most heartwarming. This Sukkot story is called This Too Shall Pass, and is taken from the book The Classic Tales, 4,000 Years of Jewish Lore, by Ellen Frankel. Published by Jason Aronson Incorporated in 1993. Benaiah ben Jehoiada was King Solomon's most trusted minister. He used to boast that he had never failed to do what the king asked of him. One day, Solomon decided to humble Benaiah to put an end to his boasting. So he summoned the minister and said to him, "Benaiah, there is a certain ring I want you to find and bring to me. I wish to wear it for Sukkot. That gives you 6 months to find it." "If it exists anywhere on earth, Your Majesty," replied Benaiah, "I will find it and bring it to you. But what makes this ring so special?" "It has magic powers," answered the king. "If a happy man looks at it, he becomes sad. And if a sad man looks at it, he becomes happy." Now, Solomon knew that no such ring existed in the world, but he wished to give his minister a little taste of humility. "You shall have it in time for Sukkot," promised Benaiah, and eagerly he left the palace to begin his search. But as hard as he looked, he could not find the ring. He searched all the jewelry shops in Jerusalem, but no jeweler had ever heard of such a ring. He asked caravan drivers who traveled to far-off markets in Egypt and Babylon and the spice lands of the East, but they had never run across it. He asked ship captains who sailed the seven seas, but they too were ignorant of such a ring. Spring passed and then summer, and still Benaiah had no idea where he could find the ring. As Sukkot neared, he became so sad that he avoided seeing people, especially the king. On the night before Sukkot, he decided to take a walk in one of the poorest quarters of Jerusalem. Perhaps, he thought, a miracle will happen and I will find the ring tucked away in some forgotten corner of a poor jeweler's shop. But as dawn began to light up the eastern sky, he still had had no luck. Then he passed by a young merchant who had just begun to set out his day's wares on a shabby carpet in front of his shop. "Have you by any chance heard of a magic ring that makes the happy wearer forget his joy and the broken-hearted wearer forget his sorrow?" asked Benaiah. "If you have such a ring, you may ask any price and I will pay it." The young merchant shook his head. But nearby, his grandfather overheard Benaiah's question, and he now beckoned to his grandson with one gnarled finger. He whispered something into his grandson's ear, which made the young man smile broadly. "Wait," he called out to Benaiah, who had begun to walk away. "I think I can help you." Benaiah's heart almost stopped beating, and he ran back to the young merchant. Baffled, he watched the man take a plain gold band from his carpet and engrave something on it. But when Benaiah read the words engraved on the ring, his face broke out in a wide smile. "This is it," he cried, and he emptied his purse of gold coins into the merchant's hands. Then he ran swiftly through the dark streets to the king's palace, grasping the gold ring tightly in his hand. That night, the entire city welcomed in the holiday of Sukkot with great festivity. In the palace, Solomon presided over a magnificent feast for all his court. Benaiah sat down near the king, concealing the ring in his pocket until the king should ask for it. "Well, my friend," said Solomon, "have you found what I sent you after?" All the ministers laughed, and Solomon himself smiled. Poor Benaiah! He had finally failed his king and would feel the sting of shame. But Solomon was prepared to redeem his minister's honor by now revealing to him that he had been sent on a wild goose chase. But to everyone's surprise, Benaiah held up a small gold ring and declared, "Here it is, Your Majesty." As soon as Solomon read the inscription, the smile vanished from his face, for the jeweler had written three Hebrew letters on the gold band, Gimel, Zayin, Yud, which begin the words, Gam ze ya'avor, this too shall pass. At that moment, Solomon realized that all his wisdom and fabulous wealth and tremendous power were but fleeting things, for one day he would be nothing but dust. And the amusement he had felt just a moment before now gave way to sorrow. Solomon beckoned to his minister and said, "I have always known you were faithful, Benaiah, but now I know that you are truly wise." Then Solomon slipped the ruby signet ring off his finger and replaced it with the gold band that Benaiah had brought him. "I shall always wear this ring, my friend," he said, "and keep its wisdom close to my heart. And you shall have this ruby ring as my thanks to you." And until the day he died, Benaiah never once failed to do whatever the king asked of him. Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the story. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. I'll leave you now with the song Veshuv Itchem, With You Again, sung by the Israeli couple Chedva and David. It talks about getting together with friends from different places and celebrating this reunion. See you next week. Veshuv itchem, im erev nit orer.
ושוב איתכם נשמח כולנו יחד ולשכחם נשאים פזמון חוזר ושוב איתכם ושוב איתכם ושלום עליכם ועלינו כולם ושוב איתכם ושוב איתכם אנחנו שלכם וכל השירים שלנו ושוב איתכם ושוב איתכם ושלום עליכם Shoot it, 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 shoot